Well, welcome back to DougHammock.com and our podcast project on rethinking sex education. I try, as you know, each week to post some thoughts here to help get a conversation going about hammering out a viable, a helpful way to educate our young people about sexuality, because what we've been doing hasn't been working. And I do hope you'll join in. I hope you'll comment. And I do want to thank the many who have, because as I've said, at the end of this project, I'll turn what we learned together into a book. So let's begin this, our last episode in the project, the title of which is A Sexual Roadmap, Knowing Where the Sexual Journey Takes Us. Now, in the last episode, we explored three stages of sexual relationships and suggested that to be healthy, each stage comes with its own level of commitment. Commitments before children are less demanding. Commitments change again when the last child leaves. But at each stage, commitment is built into healthy sexuality. Our hope is that having these conversations with our young people will point them toward healthy, lifelong sexual journeys and help them understand the context that will give them the best chance of getting there. Our hope is that these conversations will help them build the appropriate commitments into their relationships. Now, in this episode, we'll ready ourselves for another conversation with our young people, a roadmap conversation, knowing what's coming. This is a conversation about how the sexual journey unfolds further down the road than they can see and helps prepare them for what's coming. Our hope for this conversation is to shape their expectations and ready them for the commitments that they're going to need as they travel through each stage of the journey. Roadmap conversations tell our kids, here's what's going to happen when you move more deeply into love. Here's what it'll be like when you're ready to have kids. This is what happens when your love matures, when life is no longer just about you or even you and your lover. Here's what it's like when your love awakens the desire for children or draws you into a deeper lifetime commitment. Here's what happens when love starts making demands on you. Here's what happens when the sexual journey calls you to all five stages of lovemaking and insists that you learn selflessness. Here's the demands that your sexual journey will make on you when life gets bigger than just my life and awakens you to a depth of love that you can't even see yet. This is a conversation that lets our young people know how the journey is going to capacitate them for the deeper kind of love, the love of the elder. This is a conversation about how this process draws us inexorably toward the love of selflessness. Here's what it's like, young person. Here's what's coming, young person. Now, this is an important conversation. It's important because the sexual road is a challenging one. It's difficult to make the transition from young love to mature love. It's difficult to move from the getting stages of love to the giving stages. Now, that the journey is demanding, that's no secret. We just simply look around and we see how many people exit before the journey does what the journey does. So this is a conversation to equip our young people to handle what's ahead, to help them develop the grit and the determination they're going to need to get there, to help them ready themselves for the deepening commitments that love will inevitably require of them. These conversations, these roadmap conversations, prepare our young people for sexual journeys that are usually more difficult than they imagine they will be. And so they help them develop the stick-to-it instincts that they're going to need. And they ready them to get to the other side of dark times and to understand that the dark times are as much a part of making love as the bright times are. And hopefully these conversations can also inspire them. Help them understand the deep benefit that accrues to us when we allow ourselves to expand to meet the demands that love makes upon us. So, erotic in, easy out. Now, one of the reasons that the readiness questions we outlined in the last episode are so important is because casual premature sex introduces erotic sexuality before we build the foundation that we're going to need over a lifetime. When our sexual relationships begin with erotic love, an unintended consequence is that we make feeling good the foundation of the relationship. Of course we do, because orgasms feel good. But when the flames of erotic pleasure burn lower, as they inevitably must, our relationships lack the resilience they need to survive. If we build our relationships on the foundation of mania or eros love, the other three Greek forms of lovemaking get left out of the relationship's DNA, and our relationships don't develop the interior toughness that they're going to need in order to survive. If the founding premise of a relationship is feeling good, when the good feelings go away, the purpose appears to no longer be being served. So, of course, couples exit. It's only reasonable. But as we've seen, wisdom enjoins us to make romance and eroticism supporting players in our relationships, not the main characters. Ancient wisdom insists we integrate all the stages of love if we want to sustain romantic or erotic love over a lifetime. Now, that's a conversation our kids need to have. Without it, they'll exit their sexual relationships too soon or too early. Without realizing it, we'll build our relationship on the basis of what can you do for me, what can you give me, and when we stop having done for us or we stop getting, we exit when the relationships stop serving that purpose. So these are important conversations, preparing our young people for the robust commitments that are required to experience the full spectrum of lovemaking. Roadmap conversations making the exit difficult. In 2008, I was talking to a couple who were dead set on divorce. Our national economy was in free fall in 2008. You probably remember that. People were losing jobs at an alarming rate. Credit was tight. Property values were plunging, and mortgages were adjusting up very fast. Now today, about the only obstacle to divorce is what it costs, and this couple was dead set on divorce, but they couldn't afford it. With one of them laid off, they decided to wait until the economy improved. Down one income, they had to stay in the house together. They fought like cats and dogs, but they were stuck. It was ugly. It was really messy. So they made an appointment to come in and learn something about conflict resolution, not to save their marriage, but to make the interim season less painful for the kids until they could get a job and afford to get divorced. That was one of the side consequences of the Great Recession. It made it difficult for couples to exit their sexual relationships. Now, as this couple learned the process of self-awareness and self-disclosure and conflict resolution, they came to see that conflicts really can be resolved. New skills began to open up a path before them that they had not even known was possible. Now, the circumstances kept them from exiting their relationship, and the discomfort of staying compelled them to learn how to do some relational work that they hadn't even known how to do, and they began to get a return on their investment, which in turn encouraged them to try harder. Because they found inside of themselves a capacity that they didn't even know they had. Without using the word, their relationship entered the pragma stage of lovemaking. They started working out our life, no longer your life, no longer my life, our life. These new skills that they developed opened them to a new kind of love that they'd not known. They began to create a level of attachment that could support sustained romantic love, that could support sustained erotic love. They created a place that Eros returns to after it ebbs and when it begins to flow again. It had ebbed so far that they could never imagine that it was going to return, but after a few months, they began to realize it wasn't gone. It had merely ebbed. Now, they're still married as I'm writing this 8 years later. They still have troubles, but they're moving forward. They're not moving backwards. Their hard work is producing something very, very beautiful, something that all the more precious because the work that it was required to create it. We want this. Each of the three stages of sexual commitment we saw in the last episode are demanding, each more so than the last. And the what's coming conversations inform our kids that not only are sexual relationships among the deepest and most fulfilling things that we humans do, they're also among the most demanding. Now, few young people associate sex with hard work. Few are prepared for demanding struggle, because romance and early love and orgasms, none of these prepare us for what lies down the road. We have this preparatory conversation because the struggle is just as important as the pleasure. The struggle invites us into a process we want to undergo. We want what the struggle does to us. We want to become the kind of people who come out the other side of this demanding process. We want our ego selves to be moderated. We want to be able to love selflessly, and we want to be able to make love that can last a lifetime. We want this. We don't just want to have sex tonight We don't just want the moment. We want a lifetime of love. We want all the facets of love. We want the deep transformation that happens on the journey. Now, in the religious tradition, we call sexual relationships sacramental. We undergo the sexual journey to be holy and transformed because sacramental relationships change us. We start the journey as self-centered adolescents, but as we undergo the process, we develop a love so deep and so selfless that our forebears called it divine, agape love, the love of the elder. And eroticism, that's only part of this much larger whole. As such, by itself, it doesn't have legs to go the distance. When we don't experience the struggle side of lovemaking, we don't experience our sexuality fully. We don't experience the inner transformation that the whole journey affords us. The black box. I'm a minister, and I get to talk to a lot of people about sex. And as you can imagine, I often emphasize how casual premature sex is white bread anemic. It doesn't take us where we really want to go. When I'm talking to people, often I'll draw a rectangle on a piece of paper. Imagine that. And I'll point to it and say, this is the black box of committed sexual relationships. We could call it the black box of sacrament. We could call it the black box of marriage. It's a black box because processes happen inside it that are a mystery. Something goes on inside there, and we don't know exactly what. What we do know is that people enter the box one way, and they come out the other side changed, different. Some mysterious process inside our sacramental relationships changes us. Committed sexual relationships do that. The sexual journey does that. We come to our sexual relationships early in our adulthood, carrying with us the echoes of our childhood. We usually come with the mindset of adolescence, the mindset that we carry over from our childhood. And in childhood, we are made happy by what we get. Of course we are. In childhood, if we hadn't gotten, we wouldn't be alive. Somebody gave to us everything we needed to be alive. Someone gave us food and shelter and clothing and education and training. Someone gave us love and kisses and hugs and Christmas presents and chocolate bars. And if what they gave us met our physical and emotional and developmental needs, well, it made us happy. That's the nature of childhood. And we usually bring that mindset to our early sexual relationships, which means that most of us start our sexual relationships immersed in the framework that we are made happy by what we get. We find a sexual partner. We fall in love. We make commitments. We marry. And unconsciously, we bring our happiness framework with us and into the black box we go, carrying with us as we go the adolescent mindset. As selflessly as we think we love our partner, the happy because of what we get framework is running inside us like the operating system of a computer, hardly seen but running everything. And without realizing it, we bring expectations about what our partner will give to us that will make us happy. He or she will give us love or kindness or companionship or regular sex or maybe family or security or affirmation or success. Whatever our currency of goodness is, we bring an expectation that we will get it from our partner. And into the black box we go. Now fast forward some number of years, usually a couple of decades, and we emerge on the other side. And whatever magical process happens in there has happened. And we emerge with a new mindset. We no longer carry the mind of the adolescent. We're no longer made happy by what we get. Somewhere in the box, we developed the mind of the elder. Adolescents go to bed happy because of what they get. Elders go to bed happy because of what they give. Something happens in the box that fundamentally rewires the foundation of our happiness. Elders go to bed happy when they've helped the kid's marriage be healthy, when the grandkids are being loved well, when the nephew is overcoming his addiction and being supported by the rest of the family. Elders go to bed happy when the youngest gets her first job and it's a match for her personality. Elders go to bed happy because of what they give. Adolescents go to bed happy because of what they get. Elders understand the way the world really is because getting yields only a limited and temporary kind of happiness. Giving, that's where the true happiness is. It really is true what the old folks used to say, that it's more blessed to give than it is to receive. You can see how this works in the way that we experience Christmas. young people can't sleep on Christmas Eve because tomorrow they are going to get. Teenagers, they don't have as much trouble. They're still excited, but they can sleep a little bit later. By the time we have kids of our own, the change is now set in. Christmas stops being about what we get, becomes about what we get for the kids. And by the time we're grandparents, nobody even knows what to get us because we don't want stuff that can be bought anymore. What elders want is the well-being of others. What elders want is to get by giving. My brother-in-law ran a business, a building business, for several years. When we were younger, we'd go walking each week, and he'd talk to me about some job he was working and how much he made on it, and he was happy because of what he got from the business. He got success and money and prestige and a nice lifestyle. But over time, I noticed a change in the way he talked about the business. What made him happy was less what the business got him and more what it made possible for him to give. It made him happy when a profitable job came in because it assured continuity for his employees' paychecks. Made him happy that he could provide a secure income and insurance benefits and well-being for his employees and their families. The black box does that. We go in as adolescents. We come out as elders. We go in made happy by what we get. We come out made happy by what we give. But again, what's inside the box is a bit of a mystery. Pain and struggle are surely in there because they help us mature. So is spirituality and learning, self-awareness, community, love, and being loved. There are a lot of elements in the black box, but one of the important processes that is inside of there is the sexual journey. The full experience of making love. Making love challenges selfishness. Mania and Eros draw us into the box. But once we're there, Philos and Pragma kick in and begin to change us. And the whole process eventually draws us toward agape, the love of the elder. That's why we take seriously the commitments that we explored at each stage of the relationship in the last episode. It's why we try and we test our relationships. It's why we enter and exit our sexual relationships carefully, because along the way, all of those commitments and all of that struggle is shaping us. They are helping us grow into reality as reality is, because really, human beings are made happy more by their giving than by their getting. It's a holy process, a precious process, a divine process. We're drawn into the box by the early stages of love. We emerge on the other side loving selflessly. We're drawn in by young love. We emerge on the other side as loving elders, able to carry others in our love. Now, I hope that sounds inspiring, because it really is. If you have seen someone who loves with the love of the elder, it inspires us deeply. I also hope that together, when we have these conversations with our young people, we can inspire them with a vision of what it is to live and to love well and deeply and thoroughly. And that's what the roadmap conversations do. They give our kids a more complete view of sexuality, a more balanced view of sexuality. Sex is not just fulfilling and joyous, it is, but it's also demanding and difficult. The box teaches us that. The box teaches us selflessness on a challenging journey, and that, too, is part of our sexuality. Now, the ancient scriptures used some pretty severe language to describe this refining process. They spoke of a fire that refines us like gold, of dying to our very selves, being crucified in the way that Christ was crucified. Spirituality does that, but so does the full sexual journey. It kills off our lesser selves. I had a metaphor in my mind one time that stuck. It's like putting two feral cats into a burlap sack and shaking it. A lot of hissing and clawing ensues, but soon things calm down and the cats change. And again, that's not a process anybody likes, but it is a process we want. We want to love deeply. We want to be made happy by what truly makes human beings happy. We want to be the kind of people who give ourselves in service to something that is bigger than ourselves. We want to live more deeply. We want to experience life's fullness. And it's a precious process. We want it. We want it for our kids. And these kinds of conversations can help our kids have that kind of life. Exiting prematurely. We can also exit the black box anytime we want. Many do. Many are drawn in by the adolescent promise that love will give them something that they want, but when love's demands are made, they exit. They sidestep the box. They go around. And when that happens, people get old, but instead of becoming elders, they just get old. They become old adolescents, which really doesn't work because getting doesn't make us happy over the long haul. A lot of people try, but when it doesn't work, many people just try harder. Maybe they trade in the old wife for a younger one. Maybe they start an affair with the mailman. Maybe they buy a sports car or get hair plugs. They get old, but they stay adolescent, trying to be happy by getting. And inevitably, that makes people increasingly unhappy because it's a strategy that only works for a short time. And the what's coming conversations that we can have with our young people, these are important because when life and the journey become struggle and difficult and painful, that pain can seem random and meaningless unless we're prepared for it, unless we understand what is happening to us when it hits and why it happens. That makes these very important conversations. They inform young people about what's coming as they walk down the path of love making. And these conversations prepare them not to exit when it gets difficult. It prepares them not to exit before the process does what the process does. So we need to prepare our young people to treat the black box with respect and to treat love's demands with respect and to summon the inner fortitude that is necessary to stick with this transformative process. Anything less, and we risk them missing something wonderful. Anything less, and we risk them missing one of the richest treasures of the human experience, the deepest yearning of their souls, the capacity for deep, selfless, divine-like love. And the process, it's ours to have for the princely sum of not exiting the black box, the princely sum of traveling the full sexual journey. Sexual relationships are not to be entered lightly, and they're not to be exited lightly. And that's a story that our kids need to hear. It's hard to know when to pull out. All that being said, and keeping it first and foremost in our minds, there are times we must exit our sexual relationships. The problem is, it's very difficult to figure out when. By the time most couples are ready to exit, so many hurtful things have been said and done, and there's such a tremendous buildup of pressure that exiting seems a necessity. Because, yes, those relationships are so demanding and so difficult and sometimes painful that when it's really hitting the fan, all we want is to get out. And it makes all the sense in the world that we should just get out. When hope is gone, we can't even imagine that we will ever love our partner again. We just want the pain to stop. And all that talk about the black box and all that talk about transforming struggle, all that stuff goes out the window when we hurt that badly. During the dark days of my own marriage, the roadmap conversations that my elders had had with me when I was young, they prepared me. They prepared me for the refining fire when it hit. They called me to a steadfastness and a grit. Now, the conversations didn't stop the pain from happening, and they didn't quiet my fears that we weren't going to make it. They didn't assure me that I would be able to do everything that was required of me or that she would be able to do it. But I did carry those conversations with me, and I remember hearing words about the hardest thing you'll ever do and the most precious thing you'll ever build. Those words echoed through my mind during the most difficult of times and gave me hope and resolve. The resolve I needed to stay with the struggle and to find the tools that we needed to succeed. So again, this is an important conversation to have with our kids. It's a conversation that can plant a seed of suspicion about all the despair and the hopelessness that tries to overrun us when these relationships become so excruciatingly difficult. The three A's. But again, there are times when exiting a relationship is the only good option. But since it's so difficult to discern if that moment has arrived, the accumulated wisdom of religion has suggested three circumstances when we should seriously consider exiting: abuse, abandonment, and adultery. These three, they wound our hearts so deeply that recovery or restoration is rarely achievable. And each of the three A's include a wide spectrum of experience. Few would hold that abuse is only a physical thing. Emotional cruelty, that's also abusive. But when do words stop being garden variety conflict and rise to the level of emotional abuse? Because couples say hurtful things in the heat of the moment all the time. We just do. So it's hard to discern when a threshold has been crossed and emotional abuse has rendered a relationship irrecoverable. And what about abandonment? Abandonment means the partner leaving and not coming back, but could also mean that the partner stays in the house but abandons his or her commitment to the relationship, or abandons his or her vows to that relationship, abandons the having and the holding and the comforting and the keeping. It's possible to abandon the relationship without leaving, by simply abandoning our commitments to love, honor, and cherish until death do us part. But on the other hand, when we're in pain, our tendency is to overstate our case. It's easy to call something that our partner does abandonment when it's really just the withdrawal that happens when people feel hurt. So discerning between the two, that's hard to do. A lot of couples have come to my office convinced that their relationship cannot survive, and most cite one of the three A's as a reason why they should divorce. But many, upon learning the skills of self-awareness and self-disclosure and conflict resolution, realize that the relationship is not as beyond hope as they had assumed. Committed, devoted, dedicated sexual relationships are among the most difficult things that we do because we're flawed, all of us. We carry hurts in our souls, hurts that get poked as we walk the journey together. And when we get poked, we tend to poke back. We react. We resist. We blame. We hurt. We yell. We withdraw. We punish. But again, we want the demands of our sexual relationship to draw our weaknesses to the surface. That's where they're transformed and redeemed. Committed sexual relationships do that for us. That's why they're so difficult. And our young people need to know that. They need to be prepared for the difficulty. They also need to be prepared for the transformation that happens on the other side of the difficulty. They need to know that the most beautiful thing we human beings experience is also one of the costliest and most demanding things that we human beings do. That the price is high, but it's worth the cost of admission. The full sexual journey is like the parable Jesus told in Matthew 13. A man finds a treasure hidden away in a field, and seeing how valuable his treasure is, he goes and he sells everything he has so he can come back and buy the field and take possession of the treasure. And this is that. It's a so precious we sell everything to have it kind of thing. And that's the roadmap conversation that our kids need to have with us. They need to be prepared for lives and committed relationships and marriages that are demanding and are difficult. They need to know how powerfully the process transforms us and the treasure that awaits us on the other side. They need to know about the black box and what it offers them. And these roadmap conversations, they help them work with instead of against this process that transforms them into elders. It's a conversation that can pave the way for their deepest fulfillment and invite them into the deepest form of love. Well, what are you thinking about? I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can post them on the Facebook page or the website at doughammock.com. You can just go to the /podcast part and make your comments. I'd love to hear what you're thinking.